Today we're going to discuss the most important topic in ufology and the occult. We're going to discuss Kenneth Grant's theories, particularly from his book Outside the Circles of Time, one of the components of the Typhonian trilogy, which breaks down the occult sciences of opening up gateways to allow extraterrestrial slash interdimensional entities into our world. The analysis will reveal how the 1945 Trinity Site atomic bomb test may have opened a portal that resulted in multiple UFO flaps ever since. This is a regular episode and a Twin Peaks Grey Lodge episode because everybody needs to listen. We'll discuss how Kenneth Grant, Jack Parsons, the Babylon Working, Douglas Milford, and President Nixon, James Shelby Downard, and then we'll get into Grant's books, or this particular book, Outside the Circles of Time, a little bit on the Mauve Zone, and we'll describe how, through the occult sciences, this whole thing breaks down. We'll talk about the role of women in sex magic, the Kalas, the Black Lodge symbol theory, making contact through dream control, manifestation through magic portals, gateways. We'll define the reverse speech of Twin Peaks and talk about unleashing the Klepoth aliens from the Black Lodge. You're listening to Isaac Weishaupt, and you're in the Grey Lodge. Now, if you don't know anything about Twin Peaks, that's totally fine. I'm going to say that right out. You'd be a lot cooler if you did, though. Just know that today's episode is going to be a critical part of the understanding of what's going on in the world of Twin Peaks. All right? As you know, I'm doing the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series, covering every component of the Twin Peaks universe from the realm of the occult and what it all means. And by the end, I'm hoping that I can cook up a theory that makes sense. All right. I got some very good components already in the recipe. But as you know, the Grey Lodge is the behind the scenes because I'm planning on writing a book where I put all this information in the book. That's the plan. I don't know. So far, it's a massive undertaking. I didn't realize it. But this is, I believe, the 44th episode in the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series. We're halfway through season 3, the final season. And I am going... So anyways, you don't need to know what's going on in Twin Peaks. Doesn't matter for this particular episode. All right? I will be elaborating on theories that I spoke about in Twin Peaks The Return Part 8, the most recent episode, which was almost entirely about the Trinity bomb test in 1945. All right? And I discussed this event multiple times, so I won't go into detail about why it's important. The short version is that supposedly, from the realm of the occult perspective, the Trinity atomic bomb test opened up a gateway for entities to come through in 1945, and this resulted in massive UFO flaps ever since. There's a reason why Mark Frost talked about Jack Parsons and Aleister Crowley with the Trinity test, and today I'm going to give you the black belt level understanding of how this all works. As far as I know, nobody's done this. I don't know why. I guess I'm a bigger Twin Peaks fan than some of these guys. I don't know. Call me crazy. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a newbie to the world of Twin Peaks, but boy, am I in love with it. And like you know, I was going to do a course on occult symbolism, and then Twin Peaks fell into my lap, and what do you know? I said, this is the course. Will I do a course someday? Sure, maybe, because I sure get a lot of hate about the Twin Peaks thing. People reject it without even trying. Sad, sad state of affairs. Now, I'm going to put some links in the show notes. If you are new to any of this and you're like, man, I wish you went deeper into some of this, check out the links. I got multiple episodes you can check out. I'm going to link you to an episode of The Secret History of Twin Peaks book by Mark Frost, where he talks about Crowley and Parsons, Roswell, and all kinds of stuff. I'll also link on July 16th, I did an episode, Apollo 11, Trinity Nuclear Bomb, Twin Peaks, Eyes Wide Shut, Sex Magic. I also interviewed Paula Harris on her and Jacques Vallée's book, The 1945 Trinity UFO Crash, about this exact topic. And for good measure, I'm going to leave you I do a podcast called Breaking Social Norms with my wife. Most of you hate it. It's fine. if you're one of the cool ones, come check it out. We talked about I broke down because Josie's the normie and I'm the conspiracy guy, and like that's the whole gist of the show. But some I don't know when conspiracy people got so fragile, but they got fragile at some point, and they can't stand anyone pushing back, right? Particularly a female. And you know, and that's okay. You don't have to listen to it, but I'm going to link in 2021. I did a thing where I described who Aleister Crowley was to her. And then in 2023, I did a three-parter on who Jack Parsons was, you know, and those are great for breaking down who these characters were. I'll give you a little taste of that today. So you don't have to, but if you want more on these topics that I'm going to talk about, those are some options. Links in the show notes as always. All right. Now, first, before we get into Kenneth Grant, Outside the Circles of Time, this book, I got this beautiful book. They republished it a year or two ago. What's the publishing date on this? Anyway, his wife, Steffi Grant, did all these cool covers for the Kenneth Grant books. There's like, I think, 9 or 10 of them. The Typhonian trilogies. Trilogies. Not three books, but like 9 books. Anyway, before we get into it, we got to revisit the Secret History of Twin Peaks book in a section called Project Grudge. All right. Now, before we get into that, I need you to understand who some of these players are. Aleister Crowley, who's that? Well, he's an occultist. I don't know if I need to introduce this guy. He was basically the, Michael Jordan of the occult. He put all the pieces together. Everyone studies Aleister Crowley because he synthesized a bunch of ideas. And, you know, it's kind of what Pythagoras was doing, too. It's about trying to understand, because there's a lot, right? When you get into the occult, there's a lot of stuff going on. Lots of weird scripts that don't make any sense. And Crowley put them together. And in 1904, he made contact with an entity called AWAS. And Crowley wrote the Book of the Law, dictated to him from this holy guardian angel of his, an entity. And the rest was history, okay? And the whole gist was, hey, I'm Aleister Crowley, sex, drugs, rock and roll. Let's bring about the new age, the Aeon of Horus. It's the new way. Let's get rid of the old way. All right. And then later he summoned a gray alien named Lamb using the Enochian magic ritual, which would later influence Jack Parsons and Kenneth Grant. So let's talk Jack Parsons. An occultist, rocket scientist, magician, ascended the ranks of Aleister Crowley's religion called Thelema in Pasadena at the Agape Lodge. Crowley eventually gives him control, but Crowley also criticizes the guy and says he's reckless and kind of an idiot. I don't know if he was an idiot. I mean, he was a rocket scientist, but you don't get NASA without Jack Parsons, because Jack Parsons and his suicide squad of rocket scientist nerds started JPL. So you don't get NASA, you don't get to the moon, supposedly to the moon, without him. That's why he's got a crater named after him on the dark side. Of course, it would be on the occulted dark side of the moon. Now, one of the guys in the Suicide Squad was Theodore von Karman, and he was a scientist descended from Rabbi Judah Lowe. And that guy's important because he claims he created a golem, a homunculus, if you will. And also, part of the Suicide Squad is Frank Molina, which ties into Ghislaine Maxwell. I mean, oh boy, it goes in deep. Because I think it was her sister who married Frank Molina's son. But Jack Parsons was very subversive, okay? He was a communist, which was much more dangerous then than it is today. It's still dangerous today, but back then it was ultra dangerous, okay? I was going to give you an example here. Anyway, Jack Parsons said that Americans who claimed to love freedom actually fear it, hate it, and want to smother it with more and more tyrannical laws. They had willingly surrendered their liberty to, quote, lying priests, conniving judges, blackmailing police. So, I mean, he didn't mince his words. But he was very subversive. And of course, he was into Crowley's things, sex, drugs, rock and roll, antinomianism, opposing organized religion, Christianity particularly, vowed to destroy it. He ends up doing this ritual called the Babylon Working to channel the Whore of Babylon into a woman who would later become into his life as Marjorie Cameron. And his goal was to do this magic ritual. He'd make L. Ron Hubbard watch him jack his meat in the desert. And he would then procreate with Marjorie Cameron, the Whore of Babylon, to procreate the Antichrist, to fulfill Crowley's end age of America, Christianity, whatever. Now, the Babylon Working was a variation of the 1918 Amalantra Working, where Crowley channeled Lamb, the gray alien. And this is, like I said earlier, derived upon John Dee and Edward Kelly's Enochian language when they were talking to the angels and the entities back in the day. But know that all of these operations revolve around sex magic. Sex magic is the foundation behind all Western esotericism. It opens up the gateway to deep functions within the subconscious. Carl Kellner referred to it as Kellner's key. So make no mistake about it. Sex magic is the key to all of this. A key in the lock. And now recall in the world of Twin Peaks, and I'm not going to harp on Twin Peaks too much for all you Twin Peaks haters out there. Recall that the key symbolism in Twin Peaks keeps popping up over and over and over, right? And particularly season 3, part 8, Ray says he now has the key after watching what happens to Mr. C. Okay. The key. Now, they used... fun fact, when Jack Parsons was making love to Marjorie Cameron to procreate the Antichrist, he was consciously pretending to have sex with his own mother. Because the Whore of Babylon represents the opposing archetypal forces of the male mind. It represents the mother and the whore. So he was trying to sort of do both things. Strange. Now, during the Babylon Working in 1946, and later we're going to hear from Kenneth Grant, a guy who I would assume knows the truth, he suggests it was 1945, which puts it more on the nose of the Trinity test. But anyway, officially 1946. Crowley criticized Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard for being sloppy. He said, look, you guys are out there jacking your meat in the desert, opening up portals, and maybe you should try closing them a little better, all right? Now, and again, if you want more on that, check out the links to the show notes. So that takes us to Kenneth Grant. Shockingly, I haven't done a show on this guy, nor do I actually know a ton about him. Besides, he's one of the most important figures of the occult. Lived from 1924 to 2011. That's a really good run, sir. That sex magic must be preserving life force or something. How old was he? That's 80. Oh, man, my math. Okay, so 76 plus 11. 87. That's a good run. And he was an occultist, a magician, wrote a ton of books, the Typhonian trilogies, member of Crowley's Thelema, started his own magical Thelema organizations, first called the New Isis Lodge, then the Typhonian Ordo Templi Orientis, the TOTO. And the TOTO was focused primarily on summoning entities through occultism and ritual magic. And, okay, so if you don't know what I'm talking about, the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis, is a ceremonial ritual magic group, all right? The TOTO was Kenneth Grant's Typhonian OTO, which was like, hey, we're going to do all this ceremonial ritual magic, but our goal is to make contact with entities and pull them into our world. And if that sounds a lot like H.P. Lovecraft, you are correct. That's one of his inspirations, right? H.P. Lovecraft also informed the Order of Nine Angles satanic organization. Because Typhon is basically Set, which is basically Satan. And, you know, when you start studying a lot of this stuff from the realm of the occult, they start putting up these sort of fine lines between these things. They're like, well, it's not really Satan, and well, but it kind of is. It seems like it. To oversimplify it, that's how I interpret it. So Kenneth Grant meets up with Aleister Crowley in 1944 in Buckinghamshire at the Bell Inn. Also makes me think of the Bell structures. Okay, Bells in Twin Peaks. Now, this was shortly before Aleister Crowley died. All right, but Grant proceeds to get really close with him, becomes a secretary. And this is when Crowley was broke and addicted to drugs. Couldn't actually pay Kenneth Grant for any of his work. So instead, he was like, I will pay you in magic. Magic spells. So he gave him all the information about magic, which was a lot at this point. And many believe that Kenneth Grant was, at this point, the successor to Aleister Crowley, the heir apparent. So Crowley inducts Kenneth Grant into the OTO. Then Grant is appointed head of the OTO by Carl Germer after Crowley dies. But then later kicked out of the group because he was too much into H.P. Lovecraft and aliens and stuff, which is why he starts the Typhonian OTO. Now, Carl Germer also connects Kenneth Grant with a guy named Wilford Talbot Smith. This is the guy who founded the Agape Lodge in Pasadena that Parsons would eventually replace. Anyhow, Kenneth Grant would claim he, in his workings and such, discovered an extraterrestrial current called the Sirius Set Current. And when they talk about currents, they're talking about energy emanating from a god or goddess. In this particular case, it's the goddess Nuit, which is referenced in Aleister Crowley's Book of the Law. All right. Now, this was part of the beef he had with Carl Germer and how he got the boat from the OTO. Now, Grant was also very much into Hinduism and Tantra, which Twin Peaks note, I don't know if you paid attention, but Dale Cooper, very also interested in Tantra. Or the Tibet, I should say. Sorry, not Tantra. Now, in the 70s, Kenneth Grant starts the TOTO. Again, all about set current, his knowledge of Tantra, and utilizing left-hand path magic, right? Left-hand path meaning antinomianism, meaning outside the stream of God's consciousness, all right? It's not about lining up with what Sky Daddy wants you to do. It's about doing what the self wants to do, pursuing one's own true will. Now, he was writing all these books about all kinds of stuff, and he finally gets into today's realm of occultism and ufology with Outside the Circles of Time, the book that I will explain to you the best way I can. Now, it starts with a I wanted to talk to you guys about the secret history of Twin Peaks. Okay, so give me 5 minutes to talk Twin Peaks, and then all you losers can get back in to the conversation. The conversation in Secret History of Twin Peaks that they talk about is President Nixon and L. Ron Hubbard, okay? And this is after L. Ron Hubbard got discharged from the Navy. But it talks about how L. Ron Hubbard ends up meeting Jack Parsons in Pasadena, right? And there was an interesting side note that the parsonage in Pasadena was possibly built by Arthur Fleming using lumber from the town of Twin Peaks. Now, Jack's, at this point, building alchemical elixirs and rockets. Remember we talked about alchemy and Rabbi Judah Lowe saying he was successfully, arguably using alchemy, created a golem. Anyway, the whole secret history of Twin Peaks is a lot of occult heavy-duty stuff. Mark Frost was not a newbie or an amateur in this realm. He clearly read a lot. He describes himself as not an occultist, but a tourist, all right? Which is how I would describe myself. But He talks about all kinds of stuff, right? So L. Ron Hubbard's setting up a ritual room with symbols and statues of Pan. The whole Twin Peaks, the Secret History of Twin Peaks book talks about defining Thelema as Will. I mean, it's really explaining all of it, right? L. Ron Hubbard notices Jack Parsons is wearing a jade ring. That's, of course, Twin Peaks lore. But the point I wanted to get to is he says stuff like how Jack Parsons says the magician longs to see. He's tying in the occult with the world of Twin Peaks, and I discuss it on that episode in depth, so listen to that one for more. Link in the show notes. Then we get to a part where there's a guy named Douglas Milford, a major character in this Twin Peaks world, and he gets sent to Pasadena in the military, and he is investigating Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons reveals how he and L. Ron Hubbard were actually in the desert doing rituals, and they saw things, grays from Zeta Reticuli, Nordics from the Dog Star. That's Sirius, by the way. This, where the set Sirius Current came from for Kenneth Grant. Parsons even says they were doing a ritual out at Roswell by the Hornada del Muerto. Ties us into the world of James Shelby Downard. There's a lot of background you got to catch up on, but I'm going to try to breeze through this. Now, Milford, they talk about testing the bomb, and Parsons replies that it's a fertile place for the working, the Babylon working, right? And even in The Secret History of Twin Peaks, he describes what the Babylon working is about. I mean, like I said, Mark Frost was no slouch with this thing, okay? Boy, I mean, I don't know how much this is important. Anyway, the whole point is that, I guess the point I want to get across is that Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard and the Babylon working are clearly associated with the Trinity test and Douglas Milford's mission with President Nixon. I mean, this is all mythology, right? It's not real. But Doug Milford and President Nixon remain in contact, and Nixon gets Milford down to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida and shows him a gray alien, basically. And it's all about opening up entities and this how this gray alien came through. All right. Now, I talked about James Shelby Downard in the past, in the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge, several times in the first season. And just a reminder, he wrote an essay titled The Call to Chaos. And he said, and I've referenced this many times because I think this guy nailed it on the head as to what's going on. He says, the United States, which long has been called a melting pot, should be more descriptively called a witch's cauldron, wherein the hierarchy of the grand architect of the universe arranges for ritualistic crimes and psycho-political psychodramas to be performed in accordance with a master plan. The ritual crimes are principally oriented to sex and death. In the cultist homage to their zany notions of the universal spirit that created the world and also has a rite of passage employed to catapult the human race into the much-trumpeted new age known as the Novus Ordo Seclorum to the Freemasons who devised this country and its currency. All right. And a lot of it had to do with the Trinity site that he talked about in King Kill 33. He talked about the Hornada del Muerto trail, which symbolically leads to the killing of the king, which he associated with JFK. It's called the Long Road of Alchemy. And the Hornada del Muerto is where the atomic bomb was set off, right? And the whole killing of the king is an alchemical ritual about the destruction of primordial matter. Right, matter is destroyed at its fundamental level of splitting atoms at the Trinity site. I don't want to go too deep in the weeds of some of this stuff. Talk about merging opposing polarities on the Downard episodes. Yeah. Okay. So then the Trinity test, and we're almost ready to get into this book. Whew. We have to recap the Mauve Zone. Again, we talked about this on Twin Peaks. You don't have to have heard that or seen that episode to get it. But Kenneth Grant wrote the Mauve Zone. He talks about how the current of the magical revival that we experienced in the mid-1900s was a reflex of an infinitely older current than the Aeon of Isis, Osiris, and Horus. And we're going to talk about those different ages here in a minute. He specifically says the 1945 atomic explosion triggered it. The atomic testing ruptured the subtle membrane of the Earth's magnetic atmosphere. There occurred a massing of the shades, and 2 years later, there swarmed through the resulting rent the forces alluded to as UFOs, LGM, ETs, etc. Which, after more than 40 years, no adequate explanation has been proposed by scientists or by the governments of this planet. From this, there was an increase in nervous and psychological disorders, as well as heightened dream activity among sensitives, artists, metaphysicians, and scientists. Artists like H.P. Lovecraft had prophecies and dreams of changes in time and space. During the Babylon Working of 1946, L. Ron Hubbard wrote, "Thou shalt become living flame before she incarnates," accurately predicting Jack Parsons' death by fire. Now, Grant claims this was a blood sacrifice to the Whore of Babylon. Kind of a Faustian bargain, is how I interpret that. Now, this reminded me of the woodsmen in Twin Peaks, all right? There's many theories about what the woodsmen are. Some suggest they died through the flames of a fire as sacrifices, like the log lady's husband. So the idea I'm suggesting is that the atomic testing did rupture the membrane, and that's kind of where we take this, right? And this is arguably depicted in Twin Peaks. I don't know if it's arguably. To me, it's clearly depicted in Twin Peaks in Season 3, Part 8. Twin Peaks, The Return, Part 8. Got a light. And it shows us how evil enters the world now. Strap in, because I got a lot of crazy stuff to tell you. I'm going to read you from this book a whole lot of nonsense. Now, when I say nonsense, I mean that lovingly. I mean it in the sense that, to me, being the uninitiated, non-magician, non-occultist, it seems like a bunch of nonsense. I don't know that it is nonsense, though. I think that these people have an understanding of this that I don't know that I could ever. If you ever try reading Kenneth Grant's books, you would know what I'm talking about. It's not an easy read. It's one of the most challenging reads you'll ever have. You got to reread pages over and over and read them slowly and unpack it word by word almost. And even then, like, I don't know if I have the background to understand it. I mean, this is, like I said, this is black belt occultism here. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to read you his exact words from most of this and then tell you what I think. And I could very well be wrong about some of my interpretations. What I'm not wrong about is the passages I will read to you, because I'm reading you directly from the book. Okay? The book is generally about man's evolution into cosmic consciousness, aided through the assistance of entities that we conjure through occult ritual magic. That's why they want to contact the aliens. Quote, "Now more than ever before, it is evident that man must find his center, his soul, or perish as a self-conscious entity. Hitherto, the search for meaning has been achieved in a limited number of individuals by the discovery of the true will, in a Crowleyan sense by the birth of the soul, in a Gurdjieffian sense, or by the finding of personal identity in a Jungian sense. But these solutions pertain almost wholly to the level of humanity into a single linear time sequence, viz., the series of aeons and their apotheosis in an evolutionary progression from individual to cosmic consciousness." I know, that's what I'm reading, folks, okay? What he's saying is man will become God. Apotheosis, right? Man will become the cosmic consciousness. This is the perennial philosophy they all ascribe to. Now, Crowley and Grant were always talking about cycles of man, and they do it in this book as well. And again, massive topic. I could have some of this interpreted a little wrong. Here's the rough outline as I see it. It started out in the prehistorical ages that they call the nameless aeons, called void, chaos, earth, or Bess. All right, that's the first stage. Then you've got Isis, the age of Isis. This is the conceiving of the universe and the time of matriarchy. Then you've got Osiris, the age of Osiris. This is the death and resurrection of the sun. This is the patriarchal time frames. Then you got the age of Horus, the aeon of Horus. This is the age of the crown and conquering child and individuality, individualarchy, I guess. And then you've got, and they call the next, and this is where it gets a little confusing. From what I understand, Crowley was like, yes, I should in the aeon of Horus. And before he died, we already went into the next age, the aeon of Mat. And then there's the aeon of Harpocrates. That's fuzzy to me. All right. But they call Harpocrates the wordless aeon because Harpocrates is the vowel silence, the sign of Harpocrates. And this completes the cycle. Now, remember all the shows we've done over the years. We talked about the Great Reset, the book Generations. We talked about traditionalism and Steve Bannon. And all of these people think that we are in the Kali Yuga. We're in the final age. And they want to sort of posture for the slate to get wiped clean and start fresh. So everyone's got these competing ideologies and they're like, I want to be in power when the cycle ends. That's why things are kind of crazy, right? Now, later in the introduction, it says that each aeon, each age, has its own magical formula. But the idea is that man finds his soul through true will and becomes God and evolves into cosmic consciousness. And he says, one dissolves into the cosmic consciousness through the destruction of ego. Now, if you recall, in my Twin Peaks Season 2 wrap-up, I talked about how I believe Dale Cooper is doing a ritual of crossing the abyss and testing the destruction of ego. And they did this. They showed us this through the coffee test. They offer him the coffee. Don't drink the coffee, Coop. Okay. Back to the book. Introduction. He's saying that certain people are sensitive to seeing these vibrations or currents. That's Cooper, right? FBI Special Agent Dale Cooper. Remember all at the end of Season 2, everyone's left arm was trembling. Even in Season 3, we see it with Dougie. They're sensitive to the vibrations and currents of the Black Lodge opening its gates. Quote, throughout the centuries, sensitive individuals, priests of dark face that inspired the poets and prophets of antiquity, have made themselves receptive and available to cosmic impulses and vibrations. We also find out that women are particularly useful as vehicles for this superhuman extraterrestrial influence. Now, because in the Grey Lodge we have not completed Season 3, I will not be spoiling anything past Part 8. But are there any characters that are women in the world of Twin Peaks who could be vehicles for superhuman or extraterrestrial entities? Huh. Remember at the end of Part 8, there was that girl. And almost on command, her mouth opens up and that bug thing crawls in. Recall that Laura and Sarah had this empathic connection of sorts. They kind of both knew a disturbance in the Force. Quote, it is comprehensible only if woman is regarded as a goddess or as the vehicle of a goddess, as it is enjoined that she should be during the tantric rites. This surely is a very high form of asceticism. It means that woman is to be envisaged as a vehicle of divine or superhuman influence. And if, as suggested in Night Side of Eden, that's a different book he wrote, the sexual energies can be invoked to activate the zone of Deoth, Yesod, the key zone which gives access to the other side of the Tree of Life. And it talks about the Klepoth later on. Then we get what I interpret as an amazing explanation for something I brought up in the last Grey Lodge episode. All right. If you recall, in Twin Peaks The Return Part 8, we saw the clock we saw the Trinity atomic test in 1945. All right. Then a whole bunch of crazy stuff. Then we see the desert and the clock ticks to 1956 and says August 5th, New Mexico desert. And I did the math on that. And unless I'm wrong on my math, July 16th, 1945 to August 5th, 1956 is 11 years and 20 days. And I said to you guys, I said, I don't know if that's relevant to anything. It's kind of interesting. And during that time frame, this bug is incubating and it hatches in the desert sands. The implication being that this thing's been waiting to hatch since the Trinity explosion of 1945. All right. 11 years being the incubation period. 11 is the number of magic. And that's kind of where I left it, right? But listen to this and tell me if I'm being, I mean, call me a conspiracy theorist. Quote, according to the Book of Thoth, Atu resembles the formula of lust. And Atu 9, the number of Yesod, resumes that of the hermit symbolic of the secret seed, Yod, worshipped in the cult of spermatozone. Taken together, the two numbers of the major formulae of OTO magic, 11 and 9, produce 20, which is the number of Atu entitled the Aeon. So, I mean, I'm thinking, well, there's 11, there's 9, and there's 20. 11 and 20, like 11 years, 20 days from literally the last episode. So is the number of magic 11 and the number of the product it makes with 9, 20, the number of the Atu, the age, is that significant to anything? Well, I have no clue. We're way down deep in the occult weeds. And if you're an astute listener, you're already thinking 9/11. What? Yeah, if I got some shows for you to listen to, I did 5 episodes on the occult symbolism of 9/11 back in September of 21, I believe. You're gonna have to scroll find that. And if there's an episode I talk about and you're like, bro, when did you do that? Just go to IlluminatiWatcher.com. I've got a big old link on the right-hand margin, or if you're on your cell phone, scroll all the way down. It says Index of All Episodes. And you go there, and you can do a Control-F search on that, and it's every single episode I've published since 2014, hundreds of episodes. You can find the 9/11 series. So I'm like, okay, what's the significance? I have no clue. This Kenneth Grant guy is confusing. I Google it, and I find a website about Crowley's Thoth Tarot deck, and they talk about card 20, which is called the Aeon. No, which is the Aeon, excuse me. It says here, quote, the old card was called the Angel or the Last Judgment. It represented an angel or messenger blowing a trumpet, attached to which was a flag, bearing the symbol of the Aeon of Osiris. Below him, the graves were opening, the dead rising up. There were three of them, the central one and his hands raised with right angles at the elbows and shoulders so as to form the letter Shin, which refers to fire. The card therefore represented the destruction of the world by fire. Well, my goodness. The number 20 represents the destruction of the world through fire. I mean, is that not what we're shown in Twin Peaks? The Trinity test. Fire walk with me over and over. And we know that bug was hibernating for 11 years and 20 days. 11, the number of magic. 20, apparently, the number of apocalypse, the end age, the end time. Through fire, nonetheless. I should note that that letter Shin is the, they call it the signature of Set, and it's Atu. It actually looks like a W, and you could argue that that is the Black Lodge symbol. All right. So there's the Black Lodge thing. Next chapter, chapter one. Oh my God, we're only on chapter one. I assure you this isn't going to be much longer because I'm not going to read every gritty detail I've got written in my notes. I'm going to lose you guys. I already know I'm going to lose you guys. Because I would lose me too. I'd be like, bro, shut up. Shut up with your magic talk. Who cares? Tell me what it means. Chapter 1, The Monstrous Soul. He's claiming that artists can tune their third eye and make contact with other dimensions. I liken this to Twin Peaks, Dale Cooper entering the Red Room through his dreams and coming back to share the experience. Quote, certain fugitive elements appear occasionally in the works of poets, painters, mystics, and occultists, which may be regarded as genuine magical manifestations, in that they demonstrate the power and ability of the artist to evoke elements of an extra-dimensional and alien universe that may be captured only by the most sensitive and delicately adjusted antennae of human consciousness. These artists accomplished a leap into other dimensions, and this is the important point, returned to record their extra-dimensional experiences. Recall in Season 1 and Season 2, all of the connections to the occult, or the CDs, the powers unlocked from Tibet for Cooper. In the Season 2 finale, Cooper and Annie, they both lock up. They both lock up near the Glastonbury Grove. This is a depiction of evoking the extra-dimensional alien universe. Recall in Fire Walk With Me, Annie telling Laura, write this in your journal. You know, they're making contact and they're returning to record the experience. Chapter 2, Kala's Out of Space. Quote, the term dream control connotes the control and transformation of the waking state via the dreaming subconscious mind. Various magical systems of control, such as Austin Spares, which involve the use of sigils and sentient symbols, act upon subconscious strata. There are no precise boundaries. Recall that this is where the whole Twin Peaks universe started in Season 1 when Cooper meets up with Laura in the Red Room, which we know happens before Laura's actual death. He comes back and says, break the code, solve the crime. Cooper is practicing a form of dream control because he can control the space and bring back the information. Break the code, solve the crime. All right, Chapter 3, Nuclear Art and the New Gnosis. How do they mess with the dream world versus the real world, right? They do it through magic, and they prove this through science, through quantum physics, which has a lot of overlap with the ideas of intention and manifestation. All right. Quote, contemporary science agrees with the sacramentalist attitude to matter. The world is seen as a play of forces, which sometimes burst into manifestation and at other times remains veiled behind the apparent innocuous form of everyday objects. These forces were concealed by the ancients beneath the image of Pan, the earliest representations of which were extraordinarily hideous. The work of the magician lies in reifying these powers by bringing them into alignment with the subconscious energies that form the basic substance of manifestation. In a more particular sense, the secret of creative occultism resides in a capacity for projecting a magically charged sigil beyond the astral walls that confine consciousness to its waking states. So, again, more of this idea of how the dream world and the real world, the two realms can sort of dabble, right? And that's the idea of magic. It's as above, so below. It's a magician projecting their will into the universe and the universe sort of making those changes happen and manifest. Now, art, an artist can use the imagination dream state, they call it the seeds of the subconscious, to manifest into the real world, into the waking state. And listen to what he says. Quote, the art of the new aeon is a nuclear phenomenon. His most consciously functioning adept is Salvador Dali, the year of whose birth 1904 coincided with the transmission of Crowley, the Book of the Law. The fundamental thesis of this stellar or nuclear art is that antimatter, non-being, and absence are the source of all objects, all being, all presence. And this is a key component of a lot of this occult stuff. You know, the destruction of primordial matter, like what James Shelby Downer talked about in The Alchemical Process. It's about the destruction of matter, right? Taking the material world back to the spiritual world. That's what the Manichaeists and the Gnostics were all about. All right. non-being, antimatter. They use women as a vehicle in sex magic through fluids called the kalas. And it's a way to make contact with entities. This is what he says. Quote, the space marks are stars, the vehicles of the kalas. A magical sleep is then induced in the priestess by the method of sexual sorcery relevant to the 8th degree OTO. Sorry, it's Roman numerals there. 8th degree OTO. She dreams and receives the influx from the stars. In the mirror above her should appear the star form, at first shadowy and indistinct, of the entity with whom the magician is seeking to establish contact. So they're saying sex magic is a way of conjuring up entities through the female. Oh, dear. Well, I'm not going to plot spoil anything, but before we get to the end of Twin Peaks Season 3, I'm going to guess we got a little bit of a sex magic element, Whore of Babylon, we may find in there. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Okay, so Grant starts talking about portals and gateways. Here we go. Jeez. And I'm going to tie this into the idea of entering the Black Lodge, the Waiting Room, the White Lodge, whatever, Twin Peaks. Quote, during many years of research in mythology and folklore, this writer has been repeatedly surprised by the disproportionately large amount of material containing allusions to doors, gateways, and other means of ingress and egress to alien worlds. Fairy worlds, demon worlds, shadowy worlds, peopled with the denizens of other dimensions. Entrance or outrance, depending upon a knowledge of a particular words or phrases intoned in a special way, or of gestures similarly esoteric. Furthermore, passage into other worlds was usually one way. Those that penetrated the veil rarely emerged again this side of it. Now, plot spoiler for Twin Peaks Season 2 coming right now. Fast forward at least a minute. In Season 2, Cooper, at the end of Season 2, Cooper and Annie enter the Glastonbury Grove, right? Remember that? And who comes back? Mr. C slash Bob comes back. And Annie. So Cooper didn't actually come back. Annie did, though. But she's a hot mess. And so was Dougie, by the way. That's Cooper. We think at this point that's Cooper trying to come back, right? That's kind of what he's saying there. Passage into the worlds was usually one way. Chapter 4, The Gates of Azin. This chapter talks about opening gateways by having multiple magicians do operations to channel aliens, and this is how they will start the new age. All right? We're almost close to being done, not with the whole book, but with the because I've only got chapters 4 and 5 that I need to talk to you about, because this is the nuts of the matter. So we're almost done. Hang in there. Grant talks about the nuclear phenomenon around the time of Parsons' Babylon Working. He says, this is Kenneth Grant, the working, referring to the Babylon Working, the working began in 1945-6. So there you go, right there. The guy who would know says it started in 1945. Everywhere you look online, you'll see 1946. Is it because it's too close to the truth? All right, the working began in 1945-6, a few months before Crowley's death in 1947, and just prior to the wave of unexplained aerial phenomena we now recall as the Great Flying Saucer Flap. He's talking about multiple stages, because there were, I think, two stages to the Babylon working that he had to do. The first was to manifest the Whore of Babylon into his life, and the second was to procreate, I think is how that went. Parsons opened a door and something flew in. He supposed it was Babylon in the fourth chapter of the Book of the Law. He just says AL. Others have supposed other things, but all are agreed that something unusual, something inexplicable by mundane laws, occurred around that time. Various writers have suggested that extra-mundane intelligences are apprehensive about nuclear disturbances originating on Earth. The UFO flap that commenced after Hiroshima was considered by some to be part of an investigation into the situation here on Earth, which may lead to the abandonment of what is, perhaps after all, merely an experiment in human evolution. it would not be the first time that such an experiment has failed. Now I got notes here. The Book of Zizan? Why did I write about the Book of Zayan? D-Z-Y-A-N. This, okay, I wrote, look, I don't know what I meant by this, I'll be honest. This statement, he refers to the Book of Zayan, the Berosian account of creation. Oh, okay, here we go. Now I see why I wrote this. So it says that in the book, and I was like, what the hell does that mean? So then I looked it up. The Book of Zayan is a Blavatsky supposed text from Tibet and forms the basis for the secret doctrine. And this influenced all kinds of ancient astronaut and UFO theories. Blavatsky said that this was secret knowledge from the occult brotherhood, not meant for the profane, not meant for dummies like you and I. And we know that Blavatskyan theosophy has so much influence in Twin Peaks. You can see the UFO connection there. Now, at the end of chapter 4, Grant also suggests that maybe man is ego-focused to believe that man can create such technology, or that nukes are so scary to the aliens. Quote, on the other hand, man likes to feel, no doubt, that his puny activities could disturb remote galaxies. He may hazard extinction, even for the sake of exalting his ego in such a manner. Man's thinking is determined by the mass media to a larger extent than he is prepared to admit. He therefore tends to interpret occult phenomena in terms of extraterrestrials, spacecraft constructed on principles he will one day himself understand and use, planetary and interplanetary wars, and so on. To the occultist, however, a quite different interpretation suggests itself. And he suggests, again, this is what I think, that what this all is magicians using occult forces to contact entities. And mouth-breathing men out there are like, cool, man, give me the, I'm going to build my spaceship now, or whatever. Chapter 5, this is the last one we talk about, and we're going to wrap it up, you know. The first half of the book is giving us plenty of information. Chapter 5, Magical Mannequins. Grant believes that not everyone can see the entities because we all have different levels of consciousness, right? And this makes a ton of sense. It's like we all experience this world in different ways. Like, you know, Trump people can't believe people like Harris. Harris people can't believe people like Trump. You know, it's like we have different realities at this point. It's pretty crazy. Quote, the fact that not all people see these creatures seems to suggest that they exist at profoundly subjective levels of consciousness. And that could be true, right? Like some people just maybe don't believe in the aliens and they don't see them in the sky. They talked about this with Christopher Columbus and they claimed the natives didn't see the boats coming because they had no idea what a boat looked like. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they say. So Kenneth Grant talks about needing the power of dream control for certain rituals in conjunction with the full moon, which all of Twin Peaks, you always see phases of the moon, always. And he even talks about reverse speech. And I would argue that Cooper in season 1, when he's hanging upside down, could be the highest state of trance. Listen to this. Quote, it is the symbol of the backward way, typical of the inversion of the senses, that leads to the highest states of trance. So now we can argue that's why the reverse speech happens in the Black Lodge, in the Red Room, in the Waiting Room, whatever. It's the highest state of trance. Further in, deeper than just a dream state. Because remember, Cooper experiences the Red Room first in a dream state, then in a literal state with reverse speech. Huh. Then, Kenneth Grant, we're almost done. There's more talk about the word secret, right? Because Crowley makes note that the term, the word secret, gets relayed to him when he wrote the Book of the Law so many times. But the suggestion here is that it could be a reference to secret ions, secretions, meaning kalas, the fluids from the female, from achieved through Tantra sex magic, meaning the goddess sex magic can unlock the new age. And Grant says that the new aeon is represented by the wand of double powers, as is 9 plus 11 equals 20. That's why the OTO has a 9th and 11th degree as the mystery of the secret path, which is sex magic. And finally, he rounds it all out to say exactly what I'm trying to get to when I'm talking about Twin Peaks Season 3, Part 8, with the atomic testing at Trinity. And James Shelby Downer's theories and everything. It's all right here. Quote, "They are the extraterrestrial entities imprisoned within the tower until their time for release. An emergence initiates the mysterious explosion, nuclear, which magically evokes them." I mean, he says it right there. The nuclear explosion magically evokes entities. "These creatures, which are a klepothic nature," that's evil, right, "are permeating the astral atmosphere of the Earth, preparing the way for the denizens of Daoth that swarm beyond the veil of the abyss. They appear to clairvoyants and to occultists immersed in magical dreams as fantastic forms, such as those glimpsed by Berossus, forms reflected in the earliest myths of creation, due to a cosmic time lag noted by Crowley and by Frater Akkad. With greater emphasis, these entities are now emerging from their astral sleep, dream existence, into the waking state of human consciousness. How to deal with them is one of the most urgent problems now facing humanity." So there you go. I'm glad I'm done reading passages. My goodness. That's it. We're not going to finish Grant's book quite yet. I've actually got more from this book. I lied to you. We got to get into the next couple chapters, but we're not going to do that until we finish Twin Peaks. So we've got to wrap you up on the Grey Lodge, and there's still time to catch up, folks. There's still time to catch up, folks. Do it. Right now I'm doing the Grey Lodge only for supporters. I will drop it on the free feed most likely next year. I don't know. We'll see. The original vision was supporters got the behind the scenes of me writing this book. Now that my notes are outrageous. I mean, this is would be easily be the largest book I've ever written. So that makes me second guess and think, man, I don't know if I have the time or the want to create a full book, because I feel like I've presented all of this, or I will have presented all of it at this point. So I don't know if I'm going to do the book. Either way, my original vision was when I published the book, I was going to make all the episodes free. When I make that decision next year in 25, you'll be able to access all of them for free. So if you want to wait, go for it. If you want to support the show, go for it. But that's the point of Kenneth Grant's Outside the Circles of Time as it pertains to bringing aliens into our world. And like I said, when we wrap up Season 3, The Return, we're done, basically, right? We'll talk the final dossier, and then I'm going to tell you what I think the whole thing's about. What is Season 3 about? I already told you what Season 1 and 2 is about. I'll tell you what Season 3 is about and how it fits into the theories from Season 1 and 2 wrap up. And we're going to go deeper into this book, because guess what? There's actually more in here. And the things that you're going to find out are pretty astounding when I tell you them anytime now. Within a few months, we're going to be done. So if you want to support the show, you want to dig into Twin Peaks, this is the only way to do it. You got to join me in the Grey Lodge. Sign up at the patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher or Apple Podcast Premium or IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP section. If you know how to copy and paste an RSS feed into a compatible app, check out the different options at IlluminatiWatcher.com. Hit the VIP tab and you can check out what all three get you. You get books, you get early access, you get ad-free, you get hundreds of bonus episodes, and it's only for a few bucks. Wow. Less than a cup of coffee. Thank you for joining me in this episode. If you're a Grey Lodge person, stay tuned. We got more Twin Peaks coming. If you're not, that's fine too. I still love you. Till next time, stay positive.